All right, we are live. Can you all hear me? Yeah. All right. Well, welcome to our Live with the Heads today. We are going to have a treat. We have a special guest with us today. So again, my name is Casey Hitchcock, and I am the co-head of school at Lynn Haven. And we're going to go around the room and have our guests introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is Amalia Oswald, and I am the upper school and middle school English teacher at Lynn Haven.
Hi, my name is Jim Frago, and I teach computer science and middle school history and science here at Lynn Haven.
Hello, I'm Annie Dougherty. I teach upper school history here at Lynn Haven, also the assistant dean.
Fantastic. Well, so I asked these three here today because a couple weeks ago they went on a grand adventure with some of our students and took them on our first overnight trip, school overnight trip, multi-night overnight trip, I should put it that way, of the year, because we had our seniors at the beginning of the year. They went on their college overnight. That's one night, college campuses, you know, seeing everything. But this was 3 nights, 4 days in DC with a group of students doing all the things. So do me a quick favor and just give me kind of a rundown of the trip. So overall, high view.
Yeah, so we did 4 days, 3 nights in DC, and it was part of our mini-mester for February. And the kind of the overall experience of the trip was that we were going to see some of the great things that DC has to offer, like their Smithsonian's, but also experience life in a city and what that looks like from a residential standpoint and less of a tourist. So staying in an Airbnb, taking the metro, et cetera, et cetera.
Kind of giving the students a roadmap of, all right, after Lynn Haven, or even this summer, if they want to craft their own trip, what do they need to bring? What do they need to account for? So on and so forth.
And so what was, this trip was born last year, mm-hmm. right? So why did this trip come about? What was the purpose of figuring, you know, A, we need to get these students out of Dodge mm-hmm. for a little bit, right? And why DC?
I feel like it was partially inspired by like the COVID, like we just need to get up and out and away, not like in the area, but like 3 hours away, give them a moment to feel like they are back out there.
Yeah, I'm experiencing. I know that I really wanted to do this because I spent my undergraduate years in and around New York City, and I was surprised when I went to college how many people had never been to a city or spent a significant amount of time in a city, and how scary that was for some kids. Or talking to some of our students and some of my students in the past, how they would be averse to certain opportunities, whether it be collegiate, summer programs, etc., because they were worried about navigating a city. And we really wanted to be able to give them a chance to do that and navigate that in a safe place where they also had adults who they could fall back on and be like, hey, actually, what do I do in this situation? And we were there to guide them. So I think it was that wanting to get out of the classroom, but also those life skills of what it's like to be in a city and be a young person in a city.
Yeah. And also the bonding experience that travel provides. I mean, they're here, they're around each other every single day, but traveling somewhere, living together in a confined space, having shared experiences, really creates that bonding that you don't see in everyday, I mean, schools. We're a small school, but a lot of kids still don't know each other. Mm. And by going out and doing this and having a shared experience with kids you may or may not be socializing with every day, really does provide a greater bonding experience.
So question, you know, with that in mind, you know, so last year you all brought this to us saying we really want to do this. we want to get the, you know, we want to get this group. And part of my question is, okay, well, what group? Mm-hmm. How do you decide who you're going to take on this trip? Because it can't just be, if you want that, not just socializing with mm-hmm. your small group. So how did you all get the students to pick for this trip?
We went through an application process because, of course, we don't want to force a child to go into a city if they don't want to go there. Like, we're never going to put, we're going to be like, it's time to experience the subway system. We're not going to force a child into that, right? But if we did open it up to our Magnolia and our Willow House members, so junior, senior, some people might call them, and we wanted to give them priority so that they could, because they were closest to leaving the school and closest to graduating. But they did have to go through an application process that we asked them questions why they wanted to go on this trip, if they felt comfortable sharing space with other students, because student comfort and safety was, of course, our top priority throughout the whole thing. And also what they wanted to do, like what they wanted to get out of it, because we really wanted to make this student-centered.
It gave us, especially that question of like, all right, what do you want to do? It gave us a more clear idea of what the itinerary should be and what we should craft for them. Like, we ended up throwing in the escape room, the Monuments by Moonlight tour, just little fun moments of places that they probably would not have actively had the chance to do, but now they were able to do them.
So you say you kind of skipped them in there. Like, so was that planned? Escape room and all that? Was it like, hey, we want to do it, but we're going to play it by ear and see how they respond? Or was that just sort of the spontaneous nature of the trip?
If I remember, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, we presented ideas mm-hmm. for them to choose from. So any trip like this, you're still dealing with students and you're still dealing with the kids. So you want to kind of corral those ideas a little bit. Otherwise, you end up with some other ideas that you have to say no with, and we don't really want to be in the habit of saying no. So once the students decided what they wanted to do, then it was up to us to try to locate those things. And so once we got up there, it was pretty well planned.
Okay.
Yeah, so there wasn't a lot of spontaneity to the trip. Okay. Once we were up there, we was just going on one thing after another.
Mm-hmm. But the students had input. So it yeah. still felt, it still had that Lynn Haven student-centered yep. feel. It wasn't you all being like, I want to do all of these things because I think it'd be a fun trip to do in DC, but rather, you know, what would be good for the students.
Yeah, we didn't spend 10 hours in the National Gallery because that's what I would have picked. I also didn't want to bore time we to hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. You did have some last minute changes, I did hear. So
yeah, that's how we pivoted to the Space Museum.
So how did y'all handle pivoting with the students who, you know, when they make up their mind, this is what my day is going to be like?
Yeah. Well, when we decided to pivot, we pivoted from one Smithsonian to the other. And we ended up going with natural history because we wanted the kids to have, we realized we needed more STEM. And because, of course, I'm going to just push the humanities till it's pushed too far. But we wanted more STEM because the Air and Space Museum the day before was still partially under construction, and we saw how much the kids loved being in that environment. So we were like, okay, let's give them another really big Smithsonian. And so we let them choose that night. We sat them down, and we were like, what do you want to do? Do you want to do natural history or American history? And we gave them the overview, and it was a pretty overwhelming vote for natural history. Ooh. And so we just let them go for it because that's what they wanted to do. That's what they wanted to see. And they loved it. They raided that gift shop.
were you surprised at the selection?
No, actually, just because when you tell kids that there's a bunch of really cool animals all over the place,
that's right.
It's that thing where it's like, it's the child in all of us, mm-hmm. regardless of age. Like, you're like, yes, I want to see this massive whale in the ceiling. And I was surprised at how many kids had not been to the Natural History Museum.
Interesting.
That I was a little more surprised about. And so I think more than three-fourths of the group had never been. So that's why it really raised to the top of the priority mm-hmm. list.
So I find that interesting because I know that one of the things you all talked about last spring about deciding where to go and what to do, DC was a question mark because
it's so close in proximity to Richmond, right? And you're like, is this going to be novel enough for the students? So what did you find, you know, their response was, you know, in going to a city where they may have been before? They might not have done all the things you did, but just kind of ventured before. Did it still feel novel for them?
I think staying downtown in D.C., in a residential home and having to walk and commute to the different was absolutely 100% novel. Yeah. I mean, how often do they get an opportunity to have that kind of experience? So even though some of them may have been to the museums before, this was a completely different paradigm that they were existing in for those 4 days. So that, I think, really provides that framework to change their mindset for a completely different trip. And that's why D.C. was really a win for us.
When you look at Richmond and, you know, when you're living in it, it seems sometimes, I mean, I might be speaking from my own perspective, it seems kind of big. But then you hop over to D.C. and it's just like a whole new ballpark of city, and watching them first day navigate the streets and the metro versus last day watching them navigate, you could see the change and the confidence that you could just see in their walk, which was really nice to see because it built over like 2 days.
Yeah, and that's where we picked a residential area. And we picked Eckington, which is right near Howard University. So it is a college student area. There are a lot of young people living there. So it is like if you went, you know, junior year of college, you decide to get an off-campus apartment, it's going to look a lot. It's going to look really similar to something like this if you decide to go to one of the amazing universities in the D.C. area. And I think it made them realize, too, and I think like what Amanda said with Richmond, is you don't realize how big a city and how different a city is until you go to different parts of it and you go to the residential area. Like, I went to VCU, and VCU land is very different from where I live now in a residential area. It's like night and day. So I think they got to see that it's not just one thing, or it's not just the Smithsonian's, but it's commuting, it's walking, it's learning how to be a citizen in a city.
So how did you all deal with the metro? I know that that was a big piece of, I want this to be an experience that the students have, because public transportation, you know, is valuable, right? In any city, learning how to navigate the public transportation is valuable. So what was it about the metro specifically that you're like, this is the experience I want them to have?
I think D.C. metro system is one of the nicer metro systems here on the East Coast. So nicer and safer. So I think it was a good entry point for them to learn how to use some sort of mass transit. And it was very convenient with the smart cards, smart trip cards that we were using. We can get them ahead of time. The way the metro set up, learning how to navigate within a station is pretty clear. So it's really easy to get used to that as well. So kudos, lived in that city before, and that was, like I said, a really great interest for them.
Which line did y'all use the most?
Red.
Red? Okay, okay, red line.
Okay. I love public transit. Mm-hmm. I will, I love it so much. And I think, like Jim said, like once you do one, and since it was such a good entry point, like, you can, if you know how to navigate one public transit or, like, metro system, you've got a basic understanding of all of them.
Right.
Like the red line. You know it's going to go in two different directions. You need to know you're going in the right direction, and you need to understand what it's like to be on the metro at different times. So we planned that pretty precisely, that I wanted them to experience not just what it was like being on the metro, but what it was like being on the metro during rush hour. In the morning, in the afternoon, later at night, what that looks like. And I did have to be a little bit of like a little Ukrainian grandma and like be like, get on the train, guys. Like,
yeah,
gotta go. Like, it's not gonna wait for you. Yeah. But they were great. And it was so, like Amanda said, like seeing of them at the beginning and the end, I just have this image of in my head, and it made me so happy. In the beginning, you know, they were all just like, they wouldn't go to different parts of the car. You could see they were really tense. they didn't really understand how to do it. And then towards the end, I just see one of our students, because it was packed, couldn't get to one of the poles to, like, hold on to, puts his hand up, just holds onto the ceiling, and, like, does it that way, wide stance, and I was like, yes.
Looking like a local, too.
I was like, I'm looking like a local, just chilling, not worried, not being like, oh, gosh, what do I do? Yeah.
That's great.
And seeing the kids, like, give their seats up to other people on the subway because they know we're getting off in one stop, and then be like, no, it's fine, you said I'm fine. Like, that sense of civility was just really lovely to watch.
Mm-hmm. Which brings me to my next question, right? So one of the things that we wonder about, right, and what parents ask me about all the time, you know, is how is my student really, right? Mm-hmm. I get that question all the time. We're like, you say these things, but how are they really? And how do they, for better or for worse, how do they measure up? And so seeing our students out in the wild, right, in a city that I know has a lot of other students, right? It's constant field trips. I don't think there's ever a time where the city does not have some school of some sort visiting, like descending upon it, right? So how did they measure up? You know, what in your observations, what does that look like?
I can tell you from the get-go at the our first museum. African American history, there was a lot of school groups there, and our students' reaction to the other school groups was very interesting because they were saying they're not behaving and they were upset about the other schools not behaving. And so our kids went in everywhere we went with class and dignity and did a great job and something we could be proud of. I have no problem going anywhere with them because they really just, they were adults and very well-adjusted adults at that.
Yeah.
And they were interested adults. That was the coolest thing. Mm-hmm. It's like I walked through the African American History and Culture historical galleries with some of the kids, and it was amazing to see them stop, really read things that were being curated, and then turn to me or turn to a peer and be like, we learned that in class. Mm-hmm. Remember when we talked about that in Miss Doherty's class? Or my favorite was, I love how they put that in this case with all the other things. I love how they use the word curate. And I was like, I'm so excited. And they were like, I love how they did it this way or how they made it so it's an experience. And they saw that and they actually were there to learn and not just learn for the first time, but expand on the learning that we've already given them as well. And it was really beautiful to see. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is the future. Like, thank you. This is hope. Like,
that's a joke. Yeah. Just going back to the question of like how really is my kid? It's very interesting when you're looking at a group of students and how they mold throughout the year. The group that we had was just an amazing group because they all lean on each other. They have such good rapport and humor. So much humor. But just seeing them go into a Smithsonian and be able to turn that off, respect the space, and come out more thoughtful than I ever thought they could be. That we don't give them enough credit for how much emotional intelligence that they do have with each other and with the world.
Yeah. They had fun, but they were also respectful.
Yeah.
Like on the Monuments Tour, ooh, there are a lot of groups on the Monuments Tour at Moonlight because that's a big thing that you do with school groups. And I remember we were at the MLK Monument. Beautiful, amazing, you know, just so like overwhelming in an amazing way. And we're about to leave and the students are standing there. And of course it's teenagers and they're having fun, but they're also being like, wow, look at this and look at that. And then this other group of high schoolers descends onto the monument, and it's these kids who are like, they're trying to push each other, they're trying to like do some form of like odd parkour that wasn't parkour, like I don't know, very teenagery things. And it was just like, our kids were like, why are they doing that? Like, do that on the sidewalk, don't do that at the MLK like monument that's talking about justice and peace and
purpose,
right? Yeah. And equality. And you're like, and you are pretend, and you're trying to do a TikTok. So I was like, oh, God, these kids are so cool.
I love our students. They were like really,
analyzing the eyes too, mm-hmm. of the MLK statue. I never realized it, but Connor was like, you're not seeing it.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
So thinking of, you know, the benefit of this trip and the future of travel, right? It's always been a goal of Lynn Haven's. COVID kind of put a damper on things. And for the past few years, we've really struggled in terms of getting trips off the ground, just for all kinds of reasons, right? So what do you think is the benefit, you know, moving forward of having these experiences kind of embedded throughout, not just maybe your junior or senior year, but kind of moving to having some of these experiences, not maybe to this scale. This was a pretty large scale trip for us in our first. So what do you think that looks like? And the, you know, what does that mean for students if we kind of begin taking these expeditions, I guess that's the best way to put it, throughout the whole high school experience?
I think it's incredibly meaningful. Getting out and getting away from where you are does so many different things for you, just beyond academics. The interpersonal relationships that you form, being able to navigate different areas and different spaces. They're just huge benefits, so much so. I mean, I know we already have a couple of other trips coming up, and we have one coming up for seniors to Philadelphia, which mm-hmm. is going to be an even bigger, different city. And they're going to, you know, they're going to learn and grow from that and see that differently. We have a computer science trip out to Green Bay, West Virginia, which is something totally different, in a rural area, but in a national quiet zone. So those kids aren't going to have cell phones. So we're going to see how they survive for just 2 days without cell phones there. But those type of experiences are something that we just can't recreate here in the classroom. And we go above and beyond each time we venture out, in things that we just can't teach, but they can learn. So I think it really needs to become part of our ethos in what we do and venturing out and having these quests on these voyages that we go out and do.
And that's how you hit all the skills that, as you said, you can't really recreate or look at in the classroom. It has to be that experience and that continued experience where, you know, you come back months later and you're on a different trip and you remember how to properly navigate something or how to ask someone for help even. I don't know, it could vary on the trip, but just giving them more confidence, more individual confidence, especially when they're out in a different space. Mm-hmm. But they can still have that group to lean on if need be.
Yeah. I mean, the world is a big place.
Yep.
And I think sometimes we forget about that, especially after COVID. We were so isolated. And we forget that the world is a big place, or we know in the back of our heads, right? We know this in the back of our minds, like, oh, I saw on Google Maps, it's a really big world. Like, or like, I saw in that nature documentary, it's really big. There's these other places. But it's another thing where you actually go out and you go into these places and you realize that the world is a big place and it's something that should be celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
Because those things like respect, compassion, all of these tenets of Lynn Haven. When you go out and you travel into a different community, your feet are held to the fire at that moment. Now it's time to act. It's time to show those things. And I think this trip showed us that our students can. They are, not only can they, but they are excited to. They want to. They want to be a global citizen. And travel gives them that opportunity to really show their stuff and do that.
Yeah. I think one thing that we have kind of overlooked here was just spending the night away from home.
Yeah.
Without everything. You know, that's something that a lot of our kids haven't done. And the one big experience we have coming up is Camp Lynn Haven,
mm-hmm.
for that, where we'll all be able to go away and practice just that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just doing that successfully is a huge win for a lot of our students. Putting them in an unfamiliar environment with familiar people,
yeah,
I think really does help overcome that.
So you all I mean, you all lived in a house, right, for that time. And so it really was that experience of home away from home, mm-hmm. right? It wasn't hotel living and restaurant mm-hmm. eating,
room service.
Right? It was home away from home. And so how do you think that impacted students in terms of meal planning and cooking and cleaning up after that idea of living within a community of people who are not your siblings or parents, right? Or grandparents or whoever you live with. Because I think that too was a learning experience in of itself.
Yeah. We had a meeting before we went on the trip where I asked them, like, what will you eat? Because obviously you're not going to eat what I eat. I'm not, et cetera, et cetera. Like, what will you eat? And like, let's do that as a group. So we had a meeting about that and they were like, okay, this is what we're comfortable with. This is what we want. And I was like, great. We'll always have backup food mm-hmm. in case, you know, that day you're just living that toast life. And so when we got to the, Airbnb, I did most of the cooking, just because from a standpoint of like feasibility and like the kids were hungry when they got home. And so it was like, all right, I can do this quickly mm-hmm. and I don't have to worry about anyone's knife skills. but the deal was like, I do cooking, you do dishes, and everyone had to do them at some point. And the first night we were there, they were like loading the dishwasher in the Airbnb and they go, Miss Amalia, how does this work? And I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't have live here. And they were like, well, what do we do then? And I was like, okay, what would you do if you were in a college apartment and you had to load the dishwasher and I wasn't here, an adult wasn't here, what would you do? And they were like, oh, we should just Google it. And I was like, yeah. Okay. I was like, that's what I would have done.
Yeah.
And so like, and they did. And I still don't know how to work that dishwasher at the Airbnb because they figured it out. They told each other. Mm-hmm. They helped each other out in the mornings. They had to do dishes after breakfast. It was great. And so one morning, one of the students slept in, but it was their morning to do dishes after breakfast. Mm-hmm. But we also had a timeline that we had to keep to. So it was like, okay, in the next 20 minutes, not only do you have to eat breakfast, get ready, and like do the dishes. So another student hopped in and was like, no, you get ready, I'll do this. You just take my shift tonight at dinner. And it was like, oh, yes. Yep. Instead of like understanding the like compromise and sometimes you gotta work on the fly and move things around. So they were great when it came to stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I got a lot of students to try new foods, which as an adult, I was real proud of myself.
Casserole was a big hit.
Yeah. It went well. Like, it was great with food and all that. And I think it was like really nice to see that this is what it looks like.
Alexa, stop.
This is a reminder.
Alexa, stop.
Welcome to Live with the Heads.
Yeah.
She's reminding me to go take a walk.
Love that. I love that. Thanks. But it was that thing where it was like, okay, the effort, the work behind the food you're eating or the choices and like the fact that you can make the choice and what it looks like to eat when you're not going to be home all day, right? Like, how do I bring my own snacks? Like, they knew what the schedule was. It wasn't a surprise. And it was like, okay, I know I'm going to bring this. I know I'm going to bring that. Mm-hmm. I know what to do here. And so it was nice to see them adapt. And we really tried to have them not ask us questions, but ask each other. Because we ain't going to be there in college.
Right. And that's that authentic learning experience, right? So it's not just DC, right? It's everything that you layered onto that. It's mm-hmm. the life skills. It's the independent, you know, having that sense of independence, learning how to navigate public transportation, because you may find yourself in a city where you don't have access to a vehicle, right? Yeah. Or maybe, you know, Uber isn't the best thing to do in that city, whatever it is. And then all the learning on top of it, right? So, which brings what you did academically forward and seeing how they can relate back to it. But that's just like a very small piece of the whole trip, based on what I'm hearing from y'all. So last question. What advice would you give, to a student who wanted to go on, you know, kind of do their own trip, taking their friends, right, and going to the city or going somewhere, right, and doing a trip with, again, unfamiliar place but familiar people. So what little nugget of advice would you give them?
So I think the biggest thing, and I think we gave plenty of examples here, and that's planning ahead, especially when you're going into unfamiliar territory. Have a plan. You know, how are you going to get from point A to point B? Where are you going to eat? All those things that you do when you travel and you have traveled, putting that plan together, at least an initial plan, and being able to adjust that plan as you go, as we witnessed on our adventure. So that's probably the biggest thing, is to just not go, especially when you're going to a city. Just don't go. Have some sort of a plan that you're going to put together so you can navigate it.
And with that plan, kind of leave room for things to fall. Because as you're traveling in a big city, you know, you get behind, or potentially you spend more time at a certain museum. So just allowing yourself to deviate sometimes from that plan, but always going forth with the plan first. Also, budget.
Budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, making sure that you are bringing enough funds, but also giving yourself some of that comfort wiggle room. That gift shop was torn apart. Not literally, but there are a lot of plushies, a lot of teas.
My advice, especially when in a city with public transit, is make sure that you have cell phone reception versions of everything.
Yeah.
Like, obviously there's great metro apps, but like, take a picture of the metro, like the metro map, and have it on your phone. Have a note on your phone that tells you what your stop is. Like, okay, this is the stop and this is the address of the place I'm staying at. Mm-hmm. And like, have non-cell phone versions of it. And always, as a teen who has lost their phone many times in their life, have, I know it sounds so like odd and adult, but like, always have a note card with important cell phone numbers on it.
It's because,
you know, if you're on the subway and it's rush hour, your friend might make it into the car and you might not. In which case, like, have a plan, know where your stop is, don't, like, you know, there's no reason to freak out, you know, mm-hmm. you'll be fine. And so always have non-cell phone versions or non-like Wi-Fi or cell phone reception versions of everything. Yeah. Just so you can be like, oh, well, the Wi-Fi's out in the subway tunnel. Mm-hmm. I know where I'm going now.
That's smart. I think we are of a generation that still has at least a handful of numbers memorized.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But they do not.
Nope. Not even close.
So I think that's a really interesting, those are those things. When you've traveled with teens, you're like, okay, mental note. Right? Mm-hmm. These are things that you're going to, that you need to do.
Google is a good crutch, but it's not the end all be all.
Right.
Information retrieval.
Yeah. Well, do you have anything else? All right. I'm going to let you all get back so you can have a little bit of break before you go on to your next period. I want to thank you all for joining us. Thank you all for taking this trip and kind of...
Party was great.
I know.